This is Christopher Carter.
My name is Lolita Ritmanis.
And this is Michael McQuestion.
And we are the Dynamic Music Partners.
And you are listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
Welcome to the GeekCast Radio Network's interview of three very awesome composers. I am, of course, TF2 and Mike, and after 10 long years, I get to have a new conversation with the Dynamic Music Partners. We have Christopher Carter. Hello, sir.
Hello, Mike.
Lolita Ritmanis. Hello.
Hey, great to be here again.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Michael McQuestion. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good from one Michael to another.
That's right. Yeah, between us, we have like seven mics in this interview. If you count all the microphones.
That's good.
Yeah, exactly. Today, we will be talking about all of the work that they've done since the last time they were on the podcast. But our focus mainly will be the 25th anniversary of Batman Beyond and the release of the Volume 1 score. And technically, I interviewed Michael 7 years ago, but that's a whole other story. starting off, I forgot that Shirley Walker did some stuff on this. I forgot that she did the closing theme, and I forgot that she scored 3 episodes. So let's talk about Shirley just for a couple of minutes. She worked on the Willy Watt episode, the Card Gang episode, and the Curare episodes of season 1. What are your all's memories of those sessions, if you remember that far back?
Gosh, well, Shirley, I mean, she was the supervising composer on this, and just the whole process of us even getting the series is completely due to her genius of how she went about us actually securing this series. But the sessions were produced very much like record dates. I mean, we had full recording sessions, 2 days of mixing. I mean, it was so elaborate. And at the time, I don't even know if I even appreciated the level of production and how she managed to carve out enough funds for this type of thing with Warner Brothers. And it was amazing that Warner Brothers supported this level of production. So each track really does have a certain polish that I think sometimes TV music doesn't have an opportunity to get to because there's not enough time to polish it on that level. So that's my main recollection, is that just the hours and hours and hours spent on the production after the music had been written.
Mm, absolutely.
Yeah.
Anybody else have it? Okay.
Oh, no. I mean, yeah, absolutely. We were still very much on Shirley's team for this. And so, you know, Shirley was driving the ship at this point. Yep. And, it's just in terms of that level of production is what made it really special. And yeah, you know, much as she did in Batman, the animated series, and Superman, the animated series, she would sometimes come up with character themes that we would use. I know she came up with a really cool Middle Eastern theme for Curare, you know, and we would all support those themes. Like if we had a character show up in one of the other episodes, then we would always follow up, you know, so that there was this continuity, yeah, of the themes.
Yeah, I just, it was such an interesting process that was so different from scoring any of the orchestral shows that we had done with her. And now that I look back on that process, that what was it, like a 4 or 5 day production process of submixing and refining and recording. And I mean, it was really like making an album. I kind of wish I would have been there during her recording sessions, because we were each working on our own episodes at that time. She assigned the episodes to us and we would work on our episode. And there wasn't a lot of cross traffic between us. I didn't go to her sessions and she didn't go to my sessions. And so now I kind of wish, oh gosh, I would want to go to every one of her sessions and every one of Lolita's and every one of Chris's. And I would want to be there for the whole thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. See, I always thought it was I know it's not the same, but I always thought the music stuff was done the same way they did the voice actor stuff. If you can be in the room, you're in the room. Kind of thing, like a whole collaboration. I didn't know all the sessions were separate.
Yeah, no, they were. Because sometimes the episodes would come in and they would overlap, and so we would be working at the same time, but not on the same episode. Mm-hmm. And so each of us would kind of go our separate ways and do what had been assigned to us, and then we would all come to her location where she had a master mixing room. And we would do all the mixing there, and that's what created the continuity of sound between all the different episodes. They were all mixed by the same engineer in the same mix room, supervised by Shirley, and that's how everything came together.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's so cool. The other thing I want to bring up before we get into the 25th anniversary is, as I was listening to the Volume 1 score, on her tracks, I keep thinking, how did she come up with that sound? So there's in the Willie Defeated track at the end of that episode's cue, there's a cue at the 32-second mark where it's more of the robotic golem sound part of the theme than it is for the music for Willie. And I'm thinking, it's like this weird vocal under it. I'm like, how did she do that?
Gosh, do you guys know, Chris? Do you know? Yeah. Do you know the story?
Okay. Well, I just know that Shirley had actually been in electronic music even from way before there were, you know, computers being used to create it. She worked on the original Apocalypse Now score.
Right.
And I think that there was this kind of unbridled exploration that all of us dove into, coming from working just purely with the orchestra on Batman the Animated Series, and then adding a keyboardist synthesis on Superman the Animated Series to have more of a modern / futuristic kind of sound we added to the orchestra. When we did Batman Beyond produced in our studios, it was like just diving in and using the computer to create new sounds. And that's what I think she did, was just one of her amazing explorations, because she was just, you know, she was able to take the simplest sound and then manipulate it using the digitally to come up with these things you've never heard before.
Yeah, because as I'm listening to a lot of her tracks and a lot of your all's tracks too, there are certain sounds where I'm like, that doesn't sound like an instrument. It doesn't sound like a synthesized instrument. It doesn't sound like a regular instrument. I'm like, how did that happen? And I say that lovingly, because I love how when you all released this last year, I've had it on repeat the whole time.
Oh, like, that's awesome.
I can't stop listening to the Batman Beyond Volume 1 score out now and all the digital platforms and everywhere else. Like, I just can't stop, because we only ever before you guys released this, and we'll get into that whole story and everything else, but before you released this, the only thing that was ever released was the original soundtrack for the show and the original soundtrack for Return of the Joker, because I've got a picture of those CDs, because I remember having them like a decade or so ago, but I remember that was the only thing we had, and I kept thinking, oh, La La Land Records is going to get it, because they're going to do this and they're going to do that, because they've done everything else with the DCAU. But we'll get into all that in a bit. Batman Beyond, 25 years. Jeez, how has it been 25 years? You each have your own musical styles. How do they all come together in your musical partnership?
Well, I think it's a constant work in progress. It's important to retain your own musical voice, but we're always serving whatever the project is. And that's, you know, whether it would be the three of us working together, or, you know, for any other composers that might be working for a composer, usually a TV show or film, there's some sort of a common denominator of what the basic kind of sound or the sound palette will be, and how that affects the story. So the series is so incredibly wonderfully stylized and has such a unique look and feel across the board. I mean, the dialogue, the artwork, just the whole thing. I mean, I think for me, it definitely is, you know, if not my favorite, you know, definitely among the top favorite things that we've had an opportunity to work for. And Bruce Timm, the show's producer, he definitely had an idea of what kind of style of music he wanted. And so that's where we definitely did a deep dive into, you know, all the various examples that were set forth as far as like what kind of music he was listening to. And I mean, for me personally, it wasn't music that I was even that familiar with. I think Chris maybe having so much background as a rock and roll guy and play and having the long hair and all that during that era, it certainly Chris knew a lot about it. But you do your homework and then you hire the right people. I mean, we certainly should talk about that as well at some point. Yeah. The incredible musicians that played on it. So
yeah, absolutely.
I think as composers, it was just kind of expected in the world that we started our careers in to be very flexible, to be able to write, you know, comedy or drama or horror or action or rock or jazz. Any of that kind of stuff has to be in our toolbox somewhere. So I think for us, the three of us in particular, it wasn't as much of a stretch to work together and just figure out, oh, well, if we need to do this kind of music, we already know how to do that. And so I think that just being flexible and doing, as Lolita said, doing a lot of listening and a lot of research. And yes, I did my research in the heavy metal clubs in the Dallas scene with my long hair and my rock band. But yeah, just in terms of listening to the music, it helped us direct how we were going to choose to you know, write something that all sounded homogenous and works together.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I remember making the transition from doing first Batman the Animated Series and then Superman with orchestra, and this show came on at along just the right time. I mean, we had done I don't know how many hundreds of episodes with orchestra, and it was now time to do something completely different. And, you know, as creative professionals, that is a gift. I mean, having the ability to do something that you have never done before. And it was at the advent of sampling technology.
Yeah.
So I think, as Chris was talking about, you know, Shirley being one of the electronic music pioneers and everything, we all kind of fed off of that energy of hers when sampling technology was being created, and we were mixing audio samples with triggered samples, with synthesis, with algorithmic synthesis, with all these different types of synthesis that had happened in that particular era. And it was just this explosion of expression and creativity in a way that I had never known that I was even capable of doing. But gosh, was it fun to dig in and go for it.
Absolutely. And I think this is where we can talk about all of the awesome musicians, because these instruments that they're playing and these notes that you guys have given them to play, it's like, holy... I'm going to get into this later, but I've at the end of the questions, I have a whole thing where I'm going to take you guys through my favorite tracks, like my favorite moments, because there are just certain things where these musicians really got it. Because the point of Batman Beyond, as Bruce Timm had said then, now, and forever, is it's teenage Batman. It's Batman of the future. It's not Bruce Wayne. It's Terry McGinnis. It's a different Batman. So you need to have a different sound. And going from orchestra to what you guys did on this, it's like, oh, wow. It's just so, so fun. And I don't even know how we can talk. How do you guys want to talk about the musicians? Because they're just amazing to me.
Well, I mean, it's I need to kind of start with Gabriel Moses. I mean, we had several guitar players that worked on this series. But Gabe was kind of like the first and kind of the pivotal guitar. I think he kind of set the sound along with the guidance he got from all of us. But here's somebody who has, you know, every guitar under the sun and has, you know, huge amps, and they're, you know, and just the way the amp has to get mic'd, and just the style of playing. I mean, it's not like it's being improvised. I mean, the music is written, and then it's actually music that is, you know, we have sampled, you know, synthesized guitar that's being an example of what it will be like. But then you get somebody for whom this instrument is their part of it, like it's an appendage to their body. It's just part of their body and they get it. And so it's just so thrilling. And that, you know, that's true for any musician, that if you write something and you then actually have a world class expert in that with that instrument perform your music, it's just, you know, it gives me goosebumps just remembering. So Gabe was just one of many. I'll let the guys list some more people and we can just keep throwing names out. But I mean, unbelievable work.
Absolutely. The guitar work is amazing on this score.
Yeah, I think I do agree that Gabe put his initial stamp on the sound. But we did work with several other guitar players. We worked with Greg Herzenach, who actually has continued to work with us all these years. And he was also our main he's also been our main guitarist on just about anything else that we've done more recently. He has a whole different style. And, you know, like a casting director chooses the right actor for a role, we will cast our musicians that have the right sound that we're looking for. I was roommates in college with a bassist named John Button, and he has actually just totally taken off as a bass player. He's currently the bassist for The Who. So his life is going from stadium to stadium, yep. But you know, he is really good at not just rock playing but slap playing, and the whole episode about the slappers, the Winning Edge, has some really fun really fun chances for him to do some slapping in addition to the regular electric bass playing, and you know, but we also brought on specialists. Instrumentalists, you know, that weren't, you wouldn't even think of in terms of more of a rock sound like that. So again, the Winning Edge, John Clark was a fabulous woodwind player who played oboe and saxophone and all the other ethnic winds. The last cue on the Winning Edge is actually a duel of distorted tenor, a distorted alto sax and guitar. So, you know, we were just having fun playing the Sonic Playgrounds.
Yeah. Michael, anything to add?
Oh,
just making sure everybody to have their voice on it.
So. I think that was a great answer. I'll get the next one. All right,
there you go. I would like to add just that the meticulous, you know, very time consuming work that Mako Tsujishi and Mark Mattson did with the recording and then the sub mixing and then eventually mixing. Mako would do the final mix. I mean, that's a lot of it too. How you track all this music. And hey, guys, help me remember. Wasn't Mike Elizondo also on this, or did that come? Was it on the first release of this, or did he come later?
I don't remember. That's the thing. When Chris, you started mentioning some of the other musicians, I remember for myself, I think that came later. But I remember Mike Elizondo was a presence on this show for sure, bass wise.
And he's gone on. I mean, he's like a Grammy winning producer. I mean, an unbelievable, you know, protege of Dr. Dre, and he worked with 50 Cent and Carrie Underwood and Ry Cooder. And I mean, just so, you know, these musicians are just star power all the way around. But the interesting thing is all the drum programming and all that. I mean, that is also something. Most of it is programmed drums, but made to sound as like the best, you know, best heavy hard driving drummer that could play, you know, with Rob Zombie or somebody. So it's, but that took a lot of work too.
Well, and Mike, also, just so you know, just to make this even more special, I know that on at least one of my Batman Beyond episodes, Ian Walker, Shirley's son, was playing bass.
That's amazing.
So, I mean, it was a pretty special experience, you know, all the way around with these musicians. And I second what Lily just says about the engineering, which was such a critical part of the sound. Getting it recorded properly with the proper amps, and whether to mic the amp or whether to go to direct, and having all of the, I think we had a 24 track mix for each cue. And so we had 24 different individual, just like you would make a record album. It was exactly the same process. And that level of production and time that was required to make all that come together, I'm so glad that you feel, Mike, that it's translated into something that's still special after 25 years. Because I think it's pretty, I think it has a pretty timeless sound.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the funny thing is I've been podcasting for 15, 16 years now, and I use multi-track to do, like, when I go to edit this, I'm going to have various track because I'm probably going to, I'll have to ask this off air or something, but at some point I'm probably going to quote fair use and use like a half a second or so of some of these tracks I'm going to talk about here in a few minutes, but just to give people an example. But as a podcast editor...
Never again.
There are times where I'm end up using 40 or 50 tracks for one podcast episode, depending on how many people, depending on the topic, depending on the time length and everything else. So whatever it takes to get it done, and whatever it takes to get it done to the point where it's going to sound amazing. That's the way I've always felt about it. And with music, music just feeds my soul. It always has. It doesn't matter what kind of music it is. As long as I like it, it's like, you know, oh my God, I this is the best thing ever. And again, like I've said, and I'm going to be a broken record saying this, number one, thank you. Number two, before Volume 1, all we had was the original 20-track soundtrack release in 99. So it's like 20 tracks versus 95. I'll take the 95. Thank you very much.
That first soundtrack was actually put together before we had even finished the first season. And the Rhino Records had set kind of a cutoff that we could only choose certain tracks to be on that album.
That's crazy.
And you know, we've been fortunate that Warner Brothers has supported much more comprehensive releases, and that's so we're just thrilled that this first album has that many tracks.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of which, like I've said, last year, December 8th, Volume 1 released with 95 tracks. Is that every single music cue from Season 1, or is it only half of it?
It's nearly everything. It honestly is nearly everything. And we, you know, it was hard even to have to cut down what we did. But yeah, it's just about every piece of music from Season 1.
There's something missing from one of my episodes that a fan pointed out, and it's like, how did that happen? So anything missing, you know, maybe stay tuned without saying anything for sure. Maybe something missing will at some point appear someplace. So.
Well, there's a question about that later. So hopefully, you know.
We depend on you guys to tell us, because, I mean, sometimes things just slip by and we don't know when we're wrangling, you know, hundreds of tracks of music. You know, some things can slip through the cracks and, you know, thank goodness for people that are paying that close attention. We appreciate it. And then we can go on a treasure hunt and find those Easter eggs and make sure that, you know, everybody gets what they need to have.
Yeah, absolutely. So what went into the decision to do this release digital only, and will there ever be a physical media release?
Michael, you want to take that one?
Sure. I will say to you that this was not our decision necessarily. We would always love to do a physical release. The way for us to get this music released was for us to agree to do it digitally.
Okay.
And so that is how this happened. We were not able to forge an agreement that would give us the rights to do a physical release, but we were able to forge an agreement that could give us the digital rights to do a release. And so we thought, well, let's take advantage of this digital platform and do what we could never do with a CD release, which is 95 tracks.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's funny because the platform actually thought we were nuts, and we had to search for a specific platform to release this on a distributor that would allow us to use 95 tracks for one album. And we were strongly advised against it. We were told that that was, you know, unheard of, and that people wouldn't listen to it. Uh-huh. And that it was just too, it would, you know, be unwieldy. And, you know, we were given all sorts of reasons why we should not do it this way. And we just fought back and just said, this is what we want to do. This is how we want to do it. We feel like if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right. And we're going to do it once and make it as great as we can make it. And this is how we want to do that. So we just kind of, and we figured that rather than us be the curators, we would let the fans be the curators of the music and build their playlists and create their ultimate album of whatever they wanted from whatever we could give them. Because Everybody's going to like different things. And we didn't want to be the ones to say, well, we're not going to release this or we're not going to release that. We would have had to make those decisions if it was a physical release.
Yeah.
And with a digital release, we didn't have to make as many of those decisions and maybe disappoint somebody. Instead, we were able to release more music, and then we give you guys the opportunity to go through and make your ultimate order and your ultimate album any way you want to make it. And we were just trying to plus the idea of that platform because, you know, heck, who wouldn't love to have, you know, a collector item on the shelf? We would all love to do that. But not being able to do that, we still felt like there were some advantages and we could do something cool for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just one of those things, and I'm sorry, any of those people that have said that this wouldn't work, they're wrong. Because, like, this worked. Like, yeah. I'm going to get into it here in a few minutes, but trust me, this worked.
Great. That's so like, great to hear.
Like, Batman Beyond is in my blood. It has been in my blood for 25 years. From like even the bad episodes, and every show is going to have bad episodes. But and I'm not trying to sit here and crap on the show. But Rats wasn't good. Sorry, Rats was not a good episode. As far as the story in the episode, the music was great. The story, not so much. Yeah. But no, I've loved this show for 25 years, and for me as someone who has my ear tuned to hearing music in movies and television, I'm always like, okay, I love hearing that, but I want to hear it outside of the show. I want to hear the actual, and that's why I love soundtracks, and that's why I love scores, that's why I always have, and I always will. Yeah, and I'll get into more of that in a moment here, but do each of you have a favorite track from Volume 1?
I don't know. There's something for me about, you know, the Joker chase, because that was something that I wrote for the demo that we wanted to, you know, that we tried to get the show with. So it was also for me just like super, super produced. And it's like, I mean, one of the best demos I think that I've ever been involved in. And so the idea that went from demo to Bruce Timm wanting to actually, you know, use it in the first episode or second episode. See, I can't even remember.
The Joker chase was, yeah. I think it was Rebirth Part 1.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, it's just a rocking thing. And I just, you know, it was a little out of my comfort zone, but then just to, you know, the musicians and the, you know, just getting, you know, I just had a ball on that. So that's for me, probably my favorite So
yeah, it's track 5. It's on Rebirth Part 1. Joker's chase Terry and Bruce fights Jokers.
Yeah.
Mine would definitely, I mean, I've already mentioned it, but the Batman defeats Chapel, which is the last half of track 37. Just because it, you know, the whole idea of slappers being kind of the, you know, the super caffeinated version of making you super strong. Mm-hmm. I started the track at some ridiculous tempo, and it gets faster and faster. And then after yes, the point at which, spoiler, you know, Chapel falls into the whole box of them, it's even faster. I mean, the whole thing is just like this nuts, amazing caffeinated track. Yeah. And I just had a lot of fun doing that.
It's like you were on coffee, just like the chipmunk in Hoodwinked. Coffee, 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 coffee.
Which actually is very much like real life. So, yeah.
What about
I'm drinking coffee right now.
Well, it is still the morning over there, so that's okay. What about you, Michael?
That's funny. I have a couple of favorites. I think probably one of my very favorites, just because of my background as a composer, it's more like classical and everything. And so one of my favorite tracks is the track called Wedding Bugs and Oasis. That was a scene that required something that was very high energy, and it was also kind of hallucinatory. And so I had a chance to put a lot of stuff in there that can kind of hide it behind the groove of the electric guitars and everything. So there's people screaming, there's women giving birth, there's like all sorts of stuff going on in the background. And then there's this incredible groove, which I didn't really know how to make that happen. And, you know, I wrote the music, and then I was working with Gabe Moses at the session, and he was sort of showing me, oh, this is why this works, and this is how this happens, and this is how you make this really rock. And I was just like, God bless you. Thank you for this insight. Now I understand what makes this music work. And so it was kind of an education. So that was really fun. And then the other one I kind of really like is this last cue in Rebirth Part 2 called Bruce Hires Gopher.
I'm going to talk about that in a minute, but go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. No. Well, for me, it was a really great scene. It was the scene where it all sort of becomes very real for Terry.
Yep.
And it was a way for me to take the show musically from kind of in a sort of a wistful kind of, I don't know, like acoustic place, and then move it into Batman of the future. And having that one cue doing that, kind of coming from this really comfortable place of home and family, and then realizing, you know what, if you're going to say yes to this, your life is going to change big time forever. And that there was something very powerful about that. And maybe I kind of related to that in a kind of a musical way, because it's like once I said yes to the show, I was like, well, I gotta learn some stuff about heavy metal, you know, and my life changed forever. So it was kind of personal, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And that scene, which I will probably put in right here.
Would you be interested?
Well, of course he would. Wouldn't you, honey? I mean, to work with someone as famous as Mr. Wayne.
Sure.
I warn you, I can be a difficult taskmaster. I accept nothing short of excellence from all who work for me.
I think I can handle it.
Very good then, Mr. McGinnis. Welcome to my world.
And the way you did it, you took whatever the sound of Batman Beyond is, and then at the very end, it was a version of BTA. I'm like, oh my God. It's just amazing. Absolutely love that track.
Oh, I'm glad. That's great. Yeah. Mission accomplished.
Yep. Absolutely. So after 25 years, what are your opinions on the legacy of Batman Beyond that you all had a part in creating for it?
Oh, the legacy question is such a, you start out as one of the youngest composers, you blink and all of a sudden 25 years ago and it's a legacy. And I know that for me, that level of like having any kind of ego attachment to that is just not real at all. It's more just like, how lucky was I to be in share the same oxygen with people that were creating this show at that moment, and to be, you know, working alongside my incredibly talented colleagues and friends and just be able to do this. It's just, I think most of my career has felt that way. It's just, you know, I don't stop and, you know, oh, I'm fantastic and I'm part of this big legacy. It's just like you do the work. You hope that nobody finds out that you're, you know, you have a little bit of imposter syndrome for a lot of your career. And you realize, oh, my gosh, I've actually done some pretty, pretty amazing stuff. So it's just a blast. I'm so proud of Batman Beyond. I mean, it's just such a great show. So yeah, happy to be a part of it.
And the thing is, before Christopher goes, the thing is that 25 years ago, the internet was just becoming a thing. So, you know, when Kevin Conroy and all of them were doing the voices for Batman Animated, no one knew. Like, nobody knew voice actors in the 80s and early 90s. They knew that that was a person's name and that was the character that they voiced. Or they knew that this, like, yourself, Alita, or Michael or Christopher, like, they saw the names on the things, but they didn't know exactly. And after the internet, it's like, oh, we can find out who these people are. We can look at their body of work and look at what they've done and appreciate it and just absolutely love it. And that's just the way I've always approached it was, you know, Kevin Conroy, in the interview that we did with him back in 2012, he said that he used to love the anonymity of people not knowing that he was Batman.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, when we went to his memorial and there were like, you know, there's videos of him telling, you know, story of him like dressing up as Batman.
Yep.
And you know, driving to some party or something for a friend of his. I don't remember the details of it, but it's for us, when we've had the opportunity to go to a voice recording, I turn into just like this little, like a little fangirl. And I'm just, you know, my jaw's at the bottom of my feet. It's like, oh my God, I'm in the room with these incredible actors. And what am I supposed to be doing? I'm supposed to be helping with producing one of the songs or something. And it's just, I'm a fan, huge fan. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin.
Chris, how are you?
Yeah, Kevin was an amazing person, and the best. He told this story multiple times, and it's not just that I'm biased because I got this version, but the way in our 2012 interview that he told his September 11th story is my favorite way he tells it. And I will send you guys that clip because I have that clip cut out of that interview somewhere. But it was just so much fun, and I miss that man so much.
We all do.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as far as the legacy goes, I don't think – well, having worked on Batman the Animated Series and then Superman and then Batman Beyond, I think we had a sense that, you know, Bruce Timm and all the animators and all the voice actors were going to create something really incredible. But, right. You know, you don't go into any project expecting it to become, you know, as iconic as Batman Beyond has. So yeah, like Lolita said, I'm a fan of their work and grateful to have been a part of it. And it's amazing to see that the show is so beloved. And I'm glad for that because of the fact that I think there was a lot of uncertainty from the fans about what this was going to be. So the fact that people have grown to embrace it has been really gratifying to say, you know, there is room to reimagine the general, you know, the story of somebody you think you know so well. And I think that was really great to see that it's found its audience and it's become so beloved.
Yeah. The funny thing, and I tell this story all the time, is that at the time in 93 or 94, they were into season 2 or 3 of Batman the Animated Series. And at the time, my then stepmother, I was watching the show. I was 13 or 14 years old. It wasn't like I was 6 or anything, but I was 13 or 14. And I don't know. I think it was the Forgotten episode. And she saw, you know, Boss Biggest hit somebody or Batman hits. She's like, that's too violent. You can't watch that. So I didn't end up watching the rest of BTAS until way later. And then I remember the very first promo. I was 19 years old, 25 years ago. I remember the very first promo for Batman Beyond, and I'm like, old Bruce Wayne, teenage Batman, what is this? And what have I missed? What has happened from 1999, from 92 to 99, that I missed so much that Bruce Wayne is now old? What's going on? And Kevin, you know, the man is and was amazing and just so good.
In a future without heroes.
You're Batman.
I was Batman, and without hope.
You gotta do something.
Never again. One young man will step forward to become the Dark Knight for a new era. Warner Brothers presents...
Yeah!
A brand new hero.
Stop where you are!
No thanks. Having too much fun?
Batman Beyond. Own it on video. And look for these classic Batman animated features, Mask of the Phantasm and Sub-Zero, wherever videos are sold.
Michael, thoughts on Legacy?
I will second everything that Lolita and Chris have said, and especially the part about, you know, when you're involved in something and you're doing something, there's no way to ever know what kind of an impact it's going to have. I mean, you just do your best job. You want to make something great. You want to plus the things that everybody else has done before you. And certainly when we saw the first footage and we talked with Bruce and with Shirley about what the show was going to be, it just seemed like, wow, this is it looks incredible. It looks incredible. We were hopeful that everybody would like it. Yeah. And I mean, I'm a super fan of all things vintage that have stood the test of time. And just the idea that we're here talking to you 25 years later and that the show has accomplished that is very meaningful to me. And I think the idea that it will have a legacy, that it will move forward and that people will still be watching it and still loving how unique and artistic and brilliant creatively the show is, I'm very honored to be a part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So my favorite tracks from each of you, I've picked one track per person. We kind of already talked about your track, Michael, which is Bruce Hires Gopher. Like I've said, very well, Mr. McGinnis. Welcome to, and just the way it swells at the end is like, okay, that's Batman.
Yay, we have the same favorite track.
Yep. For Lolita, it's got to be Who Really Is Batman? Because I have that scene in my head all the time in the Shriek episode at the end where Bruce is like,
the voice kept calling me Bruce. In my mind, that's not what I call myself.
What do you call yourself? Oh, yeah. I suppose you would.
Will Friedle, amazing, amazing, amazing as the Batman Beyond and Jeremy in his voice.
But that's my name now.
Tell that to my subconscious.
Okay, great. And hearing this outside of the voices, it's like, I know where every beat in that conversation is listening to this track.
Wow, well, that's very cool. I mean, that episode was kind of a wild episode because of all the sound stuff.
Yes.
Just like, you know, a little bit of a minefield, like, how is this going to work with this sound and this, like, weird sounds and no sounds and then turning off and on the volume. And
yeah.
So I was happy that whole episode really came together. And, you know, it's all, you know, just a on a different note, just the idea that these shows are being watched, you know, like for all these years. I mean, and now, you know, you can stream it on HBO and, you know, it's like people are still watching this stuff. And I think the biggest rock star moments, I mean, Chris gets a ton of rock star moments because of his you know, theme, which is just like, I mean,
right,
one of the best all time themes, period.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when we give our seminars or when we have, you know, international kind of guest appearances at events, I mean, Batman Beyond and Teen Titans, those two are like, you know, you get these people that are just like, oh my God, you scored our childhood. And it's just, you know, people turn into just jello and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, this is just so weird, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, but thanks for that. I'm going to have to listen to Who's Really Batman again. Now I'm like, remember, like, okay, well, Mike likes it. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I've seen this show so many, I've seen these episodes so many times that I have almost all the dialogue just memorized when it comes to moments that are between Bruce and Terry. And that was one of those moments where that's one of those famous moments from the show where you have the history of Bruce Wayne. You have the history of Kevin Conroy doing the voice of Bruce Wayne. And now he's doing an old Bruce Wayne voice. And he's basically essentially telling the audience, hey, look, I'm Batman. That's who I see myself as. Bruce Wayne is the mask. It always has been when it comes to the DC animated universe. And that's what Bruce Timm always said. Batman is the man. Bruce Wayne is the cover story.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's amazing.
And then for you, Christopher, anytime, I'll say Ink in the Batcave, but anytime Ink, because for me, everyone's like, oh, Blight is Terry's number one villain. No, he's not. Blight is Bruce's business villain, is what Blight is.
Ah. Yeah.
Ink really is Terry's nemesis. It's not in a Catwoman way or anything like that, but she is his nemesis because she's gotten one up on him. He's gotten one up on her. She's the only villain in the entire series outside of the Joker in the film that has gotten into the Batcave.
Uh-huh.
You don't see Blight in the Batcave. You don't see Mad Stan in the Batcave. You don't see anybody else that has gotten that deep into Wayne Manor. So yeah, anytime that the Ink themes are going, I'm like, this is awesome.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I enjoyed kind of exploring sounds for her. In the episode where she meets Aaron.
Yep.
I actually was using a vocoder, which is, you know, a synth that uses your voice to make almost like a robot kind of sound.
Yep.
And there's actually a word saying Aaron. You can kind of hear that.
Yeah.
When he's seducing her.
Yep.
But yeah, Ink inspired a lot of fun exploration in the sound design.
Yeah. Yeah. The sound design on this, the music, the sound design, just everything. It just works. It really, really just works. And then, you know, I can't go without, you know, mentioning Shirley and that end theme. I mean, your original theme for the intro and then hers for the closing, it's like, wow. Because the main theme, the opening theme, is like, this is a whole new world. Yes, you have Bruce Wayne, you have everything else, but this is a whole new thing. This is a whole whatever. And then at the end, it's like, but don't forget, this is where it came from, kind of thing.
Oh, I agree. I think that you know, the main opening theme kind of says this is a whole new world, like you're saying, but I think Shirley's ending theme like puts the exclamation point on the end, you know? It's like the final punctuation is definitely her statement.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, I mentioned it earlier, and we mentioned it a little bit, but when are we getting volume 2? You've given us so much at this point. We need more.
I'm thrilled to hear that you want more. You know, we gauge a lot of what we're doing on the response that we get when we do a release. And I think the response has been very strong to this release. And so we're really gratified by that. You know, the more you guys are able to listen and enjoy the music, the more we learn about what you like and what you want more of. And it's always our goal to give you as much as we possibly can. It needs to be something that needs to be feasible for us. But right. if the interest is there, that says a lot. And, you know, we're going to do our best to keep releasing what we can when we can.
Now, I assume the music is, you guys still all have it. It's just not released yet. Like, I'm assuming, like, the way I, again, and I could be wrong, it's your all stuff, I don't want to, you know, whatever, but the way I'm seeing this is, okay, volume 1 is episode 1 to episode 13 of the first season. It may not be everything, but it's most everything from the entire first season. Then you got volumes 2 and 3, so volume 2 could be season 2, volume 3 could be season 3. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But
well, you'll just have to,
wait and see.
But, you know, as far as having the music of you know, I definitely, for me personally, the longer I was in the business, the more organized I was with making sure to keep absolutely everything. I mean, but sometimes we have to go hunting for stuff. And in this case, you know, the fact that this all started after, you know, Shirley passed. I mean, we were very fortunate that Ian Walker was, you know, this Shirley's estate was willing to, you know, be a part of this also. And that, you know, we were able to get that music. But you'd be surprised at how much music from, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, oftentimes people don't know where it is, you know, because employees are fired and go to other places. And you know, I've had people try to contact me about projects that I was an orchestrator on. It's like, do you have the original scores for such and such? It's like, why would I have it? You know, and it's like people. So we have most of it, but still occasionally we have to go hunting for stuff, or the media itself is deteriorated, you know.
Yeah,
you don't know, something has a glitch in it and you got to find the, you know, another copy or something. So anyway, it's important to keep everything, and this is another reason for this legacy, to get it out there, so hopefully it stays out there.
Yeah absolutely. All right, we're gonna go to a quick ad break because I know we're gonna have to do that because of time length and everything else, but that's just the way it is. And we're going to come back with Christopher, Lolita, and Michael right after this.
Hello, geeks and geekettes. Looking for a podcast that covers a vast array of topics? Then check out Altered Geek Unleashed, where we discuss our thoughts on this week's geeky news, tech, gaming, television shows, movies, cartoons, comics, and more. So, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks. Every Friday on the GeekCast Radio Network.
Because the world needs another movie podcast.
The GeekCast Radio Network presents for your listening pleasure, The Cinema Geek.
Hosted by Amanda, Kevin, Matt, and Dan.
Each week we dive headfirst in the landscape of movies as we discuss movie news, play movie games,
go in-depth on reviews,
and even have a top 10 countdown or two.
Also, don't miss our director retrospective series, where we review noted directors' movies film by film.
Bottom line is, if you love movies and love podcasts, you need to experience The Cinema Geeks.
You can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or geekcastradio.com.
Hi everyone, I'm here to tell you about the DC Comics News Podcast, here every week to talk everything DC, movies, TV, comics, and everything in between. But don't just take my word for it, here are a couple of our sponsors. Listen to the DC Comics News Podcast, it's audio justice. No, it's audio chaos. These wackos are crazier than I am. Well, maybe you're both right. Regardless, you can catch us on every kind of podcast platform. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and everywhere you find great podcasts. So, can I go now? Let him go. He did everything you asked. No.
Hi, I'm Terry Smith, the host of Music Talks, the podcast where I ask guests a simple but beguiling question. Choose a song from each decade of your life and tell me why these songs mean so much to you. Guests and listeners love this format, and if you want to find out why, then take a listen at musictalkspod.buzzsprout.com or use your favourite podcast app. Just search on Music Talks Terry Smith. If you'd like to be a guest on the show and... talk to me. Then send me a tweet at Music Talks Pod. I look forward to doing some music talking soon.
Who do you think you're talking to, old man? We're the Jokers!
Sure you are.
All right, folks, we are back here on this GeekCast Radio Network interview of the Dynamic Music Partners, Christopher Carter, Lolita Romanis, and Michael McQuestion. Before we get out of here, where can the fans interact with each of you online?
We have a website, www.dynamicmusicpartners.com. Collectively, we are on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. Individually, we do have our own Facebook profiles, but generally we would want to steer people towards the Dynamic Music Partners one. So
right, yeah.
facebook.com/dynamicmusicpartners. Instagram is also Dynamic Music Partners, and Twitter is actually dynmuspar, dynmus partners. Yeah. And we'd love to connect, you know, send us a message or come join us.
Yes, and we have a VIP list, too. If you guys are interested in these releases that we're doing, you can sign up. I think, is there a place on the website to sign up? Or you can just email us, and we'll put you on that VIP list. And we usually try to announce things and give little bonuses and things like that to people that are on our list.
Absolutely, absolutely. Very cool. All right, before I let you go, remind everybody what you guys have coming up. What are the Dynamic Music Partners working on that you can actually tell us you're working on it?
We can't say, but we are very excited that we are nominated for an Annie Award, and the awards are coming up on February 17th. We worked on a wonderful long-form project, Babylon 5, The Road Home. J. Michael Straczynski and Rick Morales, producer, and so we're going to be, you know, dressed to the nines and attending the Annie Awards coming up in February 17th.
Awesome. Very cool, very cool. All right, I would like to thank Mr. Amanis, Mr. McQuestion, Mr. Carter for joining me in this latest GCRN interview. Go forth, folks. Watch Batman Beyond. Listen to the Volume 1 score. You're going to love it if you've loved that show, or if you've ever seen it, or if you haven't seen it, learn something new. And we will catch you next time here only on the Geekcast Radio Network.
This is Kevin Conroy, and I am the goddamn Batman.
Mr. Wayne? Mr. Wayne!
Terry, you're hurt.
Just groggy.
Who did this?
It was me.